It's the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, and on this episode I'm going to be talking about a recent visit that I had to Warhammer World in the capital of the Empire itself, Altdorf. Let's crack on. So our day started off in Nottingham itself, and I was there with my wife, my daughter, and wee girl's gran and grandad. So we had the opportunity to offload the wee girl to spend the day with our gran and grandad, or at least the afternoon with our gran and grandad. My wife and I, we had a wee walk around Nottingham town centre initially. I was pretty impressed with Nottingham, to be honest. I know a few of you might laugh at that, but I think it's a nice town centre. Loads on offer, plenty shops, plenty pubs, and I'm easily pleased. So she got the old Google Maps out on the phone, and we had a walk out towards the Games Workshop and Warhammer World HQ's. Quite a nice walk as well. It was kind of along a canal. It was due to rain later on, but we decided to risk it. So we walked along there. The intention was to have our lunch at Bugman's, but because of the timings and stuff and when the rain was due to come on and that, we decided to stop. We had a wee pit stop at one of the, what they called again, Hungry Horse type pubs. You know, the kind of chain pubs. Nothing spectacular, but again, I'm easy pleased. A couple of pints and a wee bit of a microwave meal, and I was ready to go the rest of the journey. So I think that took about 20 minutes maybe to walk out to the area where you find Games Workshop and Warhammer World. So I'll admit, you know, I got a bit excited. We come up this wee ramp and you're in this kind of industrial area, like industrial estate, I guess you'd call it, where they're based, and turned the corner and just seen the Games Workshop sign on the building. And I know that these... you know, this is the modern Games Workshop, and me and a lot of listeners to this show were very much set in the 90s or even 80s, but I still hold the company in high regard in a lot of ways. They got me into the hobby, and their lore is fantastic, you know, certainly the lore from back in the day. And I was really excited. Was really excited about this visit. So we come round the corner, and we've seen the sort of Games Workshop sign, so it's a big building, and we walked up. And my first thought was it doesn't look very welcoming. Just at the door, there didn't seem to be any signage or stuff like that. And a couple of guys come out the door with their Games Workshop lanyards on and coffees, obviously out for their wee tea break. And as the door was swinging shut, we were away to go into this reception. And the guy's kind of like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I said, we're looking for Warhammer World. And he kind of pointed behind us, and there's this huge building behind us, Warhammer World. Somehow we'd turned in. So there's two separate buildings, if you've not been there. There's the Games Workshop HQ and Warhammer World itself. So I don't know how we didn't see it. No idea. We walked right past it. Big Land Raider outside, or Rhino even, and a Space Marine and everything. But we managed to miss it. Nearly ended up in Games Workshop. So maybe we'd have got a job there. Don't know what use they could have found for me. Maybe sweeping the floors or cleaning the toilets. But we ended up... double back and you're just across the road. Got the customary photo of anyone that's ever visited there, photo outside with the Space Marine and photo outside with the Rhino as well. I think it's a Rhino, isn't it? That tank that they've got. Really cool anyway. Wonder who they ordered that from or if they made it themselves. I've no idea. So it was a Wednesday afternoon, and I was relatively busy for middle of the week, and you know, there was still a few people going around the exhibition itself, which I'll talk about. There was people in the shop and Bugman's and the gaming room, and the guy did say that they'd been shut for a couple of days, and I don't know, I couldn't work out if that was complete luck on our part that we'd turned up on a day that they were open, or if we'd, I say we, or if my wife had looked into this in advance. She couldn't remember either. We'd planned this for a long time, but one way or another, whether we were lucky or very well organised, didn't turn up and it was shut. That would have been pretty heartbreaking, to be honest, because I don't know that we'd have made it back. So you go inside, and there's a reception area, and a really friendly guy on the desk, and he straight away just asked, you know, if he could help us and what we were looking for. So we'd explained that we were looking to go around the exhibition. So he was just explaining to us that it's free to get in the main part. You know, you go upstairs because obviously they've got the shop and Bugman's and stuff like that. And then there's a desk up there. If you want to go round the museum, he called it, you would just pay at the wee desk up there. So went upstairs. And again, you know, you're confronted with just a lot of really cool and interesting stuff. The minute you go in the door, I was looking in one of the glass cabinets. They had a miniature from, you know, before I was born. it was like an orc on a wyvern. Is that how you say it? Wyvern? It's only a word I've ever saw written down rather than heard read out, but let's call it a small dragon. But anyway, this miniature, proper old school, old hammer one, to be honest, like the sculpting, very rough, but very cool to see this thing. It was totally unpainted, and you've seen the box art as well. Like, I think I've got a photo of it. I'm going to put photos up. I'm going to put photos up, and I'll link to them at bedroombattlefields.com. You could get a wee look as well. So we go up the stairs. They had, by the way, just before we do go up the stairs, they had some merch as well. A dressing gown or house coat. They've got like chaos patterned ones, like corn kind of design. If I wore one of them, which I don't, I would have definitely bought one, I reckon, walking around with the old chaos house coat, chaos dressing gown on. But yeah, we walked upstairs. So you've got, as you go through the doors, you've got the shop on your right. It's just a typical Games Workshop, I suppose. And then straight ahead, you've got the big gaming hall. They've got loads of big tables in there that I think you could just basically turn up and use. Imagine you turned up with the old Kings of War, Kings of War rules. I'm just in for a game of Kings of War. I think they'd have something to say about that, wouldn't they? So you've got the gaming hall, you've got Bugmans. But first things first, we wanted to go around the exhibition or museum, whatever you want to call it. So went up to the desk. I couldn't see any info on how much it was going to cost. And I was a bit like, oh, you know, don't want to upset the wife too much. But she was very understanding, you know, she knew it was something I really wanted to do. And she definitely humoured me throughout the day. And they do, I don't know if this is a thing that's ubiquitous with Games Workshop. When they're like, you're paying for stuff, they never really say the price. And she was paying with a card. And the guy, guy in the desk, really friendly, and he was explaining a lot about it. But as soon as we got through the wee door, I was like, how much did it cost? But I think it was only £7 each. Which to me, like, I was pleasantly surprised. I think they could probably... you know, once folk have travelled out there, probably from all over the world, they could probably name their price with that and people would pay it. So fair play, I suppose. You know, £7 to me seems reasonable if that helps to maintain the thing. But the guy on the upstairs reception that sold us the tickets, he explained to us that, you know, the exhibition is broken up into different rooms, and he was talking about one particular room. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4. He was saying, you'll be blown away by this thing that you see in there, this diorama. And he says, we run a wee thing where you hide, the staff hide, I think it's Imperial Assassins or something, they'll hide a miniature in this massive, massive diorama. And pretty much, you know, the people that go through are tasked with trying to find them. So again, not they've got pictures of the miniatures as you go through the door. So you do in theory know what you're looking for, but with the new miniatures, I'm so unfamiliar with them that I had not a hope in hell of finding it. Like the minute I'd walked away from the picture of them, I just couldn't even remember what they really looked like. So there was no chance us finding these miniatures, and we didn't. So yeah, we go through the door. I have my emergency check on how much it costs to get in. And first and foremost, there's two wee glass cabinets with just really cool old hammer miniatures. There's some posters up. I think it's old adverts for White Dwarf. They've got a diorama from, I think it was John Blanche in, like, again, 1982. What was it called again? March of the Dead? It was called March of the Dead, John Blanche, 1982, fantastic diorama. They've got Chaos Warriors, says early miniatures, science fantasy and Warhammer, 40,000 miniatures of the mid to late 1980s. So again, some amazing looking wee miniatures there. And at this point, I was really, really excited because I'm thinking this is going to be, you know, a museum in the very traditional sense. We're going to start at the start and we're going to go through the journey of the company. We're going to see the way that everything's evolved. And, you know, eventually we're going to come to the new and modern stuff. And that's fine. You know, that's brilliant. So I was really excited about that, just taking a journey through the company. But that's not really what it was at all. It was actually, you know, my wife that pointed this out at the end of it, because I'd said to her, and again, I'm going to talk about going around the exhibition, but we'd said at the end, you know, what did you think? And we're saying it's obviously amazing dioramas and painting and sculpting, but it was more of an art gallery slash exhibition than a museum. I would say it's not really a museum. I don't know that they market it. I think that word was used by one of the staff, museum, but I think they do pretty much call it an exhibition. But I guess, like, you know, that would have been the ideal for me, was that it was more of a journey through the company's history. And like I say, we could have really seen loads of the 80s stuff. We could have moved into the 90s and seen the way it progressed and then got into the new millennium. But definitely not a linear journey through Games Workshop, because after we'd left that initial really exciting old school stuff, we were straight into the brand new stuff. Again, absolutely world-class dioramas, these huge big dioramas that have taken multiple teams and sometimes up to a year to put together. But we were into the modern stuff. We're looking at Age of Sigmar, we're looking at 40K, Necromunda, I think. There was a lot of Lord of the Rings stuff, which it was cool as well, because it is something that my wife really likes. She read the books when she was wee, and we've very recently watched her way through all the films again, and now we're watching that new one on Amazon, Ring of Power or something like that. So we're watching that at the moment. So it was just nice to be able to see, to say to her, oh look, there's Gandalf and the lads, and give her something that she'd actually like recognised and knew of. But yeah, walking around and in amongst all of that new stuff, you've got the Emperor versus Horus diorama by Mike McVeigh from 1994. And I vividly remember reading about that in White Dwarf when it was made. So it was just really, really cool to see that in person, you know, behind glass. But it's not like I was going to touch it anyway. So just kind of stuck in there amongst these like pretty new dioramas. So again, you know, if they could have made that more of a linear journey around the history, but I'm not going to beat that drum like a broken record. You probably know my thoughts on that by now. But again, amazing to actually go and see that in person. And into that big room, you know, the room that it's like the marquee diorama, I suppose. I think it said on the sign there was something like 5,500-6,000 miniatures used on it. And it's like the centrepiece of the room. I mean, you're walking down the stairs around this thing, but it's just so massive, so vast, and so very impressive. This is the one that the wee assassin miniature is apparently hidden somewhere. But like I say, there was absolutely no chance of us finding it. They had a wee sign as well. It was like, no torches. And I was thinking, why would anyone have a torch? Of all things, but I get it. It's probably so you could shine your wee torch into the dark crevices and try and find this miniature. But I mean, fantastic piece of work. Like I say, very much an art experience rather than an actual museum. Some of the Titans, some of the size of the Titans, I think they're Forge World kit. But and I think, you know, in game, if you like, these Titans will be like small Titans, but you could buy these actual 40k style Titans now. They're massive. Like, I don't know if they'd come up to your knee or something like that, but these things are absolutely huge. So yeah, we go around the exhibition, take a lot of pictures, and yeah, it was fantastic. It was enjoyable, and we knew that wasn't the end of the day either, because there was still other things to see around the place. So we came out, we had a wee walk around the gaming tables. So again, great setup in there, as you'd expect. There's lots of different tables that you could use, and they've got bits of terrain here and there. It was one really cool table, I suppose it'd be probably for Necromunda. It was like loads of pipes and little walkways and stuff, and you were thinking it'd be great to play a game on something like that. So then it was time for a beer, you know. It was that time of day, and we nipped through to Bugman's, which I'd mentioned briefly there before. So Bugman's is on site, it's part of the building, and it's done up like, if you've seen pictures of it before, it's done up in the sort of old tavern style, which is, it's really cool, really nice wee atmosphere in there. They've done a lot of cool, nice things. Big fireplace, you know, not a real fire. I would have maybe, if I'm being super critical, I would have had a real fire in there, but maybe it's just to do with the building. I don't know if they're allowed to do that. I know nothing about fires. But Bugman's was cool. We had a couple of pints in there. A few folks in there, even though it's the middle of the week, playing wee games as well. I seen a couple of boys at their table. They were playing sort of small hex-based board game, and I think it's Warhammer Underworld. I think that's the game. So another thing that I know almost nothing about is Games Workshop games these days. But I think I nipped on the website there, and I think it's Warhammer Underworld or Underworlds. So pretty cool that you could buy a game that literally fits on the pub table. You could take that to any pub, not just Bugmans. So it depends on the reaction you'd get, so depending on what pub you were actually in. But yeah, a couple of beers in Bugmans. We'd already ate, so we didn't need to eat any more. And then nipped through to the shop for a wee look around the shop as well before we headed off back into the town centre. And she's saying to me, like, remember if you want anything? And I was like, well, you know, I don't really buy modern stuff. I buy from these other miniature companies. I don't think she cared. But, well, she maybe did care, actually, because we were walking around the shop and they've got, you see, I think it's the Forge World stuff. So that's like the Titans I'm talking about, these massive things. And they've got Smaug, you know, the dragon from Lord of the Rings. This thing is massive, absolutely massive. It'd be like holding a baby crocodile. But this thing was massive, and it was nearly 500 quid. So she's shocked. I mean, I know that sometimes stuff costs that much in the hobby. I would never pay it, but I know that it's out there. But she's like, that's the price of a holiday for Smaug. I was like, well, that's why he sits in that pile of gold, I suppose, in the film. But yeah, needless to say, I didn't walk out with that. It'd be some bit of kit that I don't even know where he'd even start to paint that. So aye, we had another wee quick look around the shop, and then it was time to go. And our intention was to catch a tram. We've got a tram system in Nottingham, apparently. But we got down to this wee tram platform, and it said, like, there's a tram coming in 6 minutes. And then, like, 5 minutes later, I was like, it still says it's coming in 6 minutes. And people are turning up. And it just stayed at 6 minutes and never turned up. So I think we gave it, like, 15 minutes. And the rain hadn't really come to anything. So I just said to her, you want to just do, like, we could have been back in the town, but now it's not far at all. So we just walked back into the town, and we passed a cool pub. Ye Olde Trip to Jerusalem. The oldest inn in England, and the date on it was 1189. That was a wee while ago, wasn't it? That's proper old hammer, that. Proper old hammer pub. So that was amazing. Like, we went in there, naturally. I can't really walk past a pub without indulging in it. It kind of was like it was... the rooms were almost carved into... Because it's right next to the castle in Nottingham. Almost like you were sitting in a room that was carved into the castle walls. I was thinking that when we were in there, but they've got suits of armour and everything like that. So just a really, really cool wee pub. They should have turned that into Bugmans, I think, when they opened the place. But anyway, I really enjoyed my little pint in there, and then we got back into the town centre and met up with the rest of the family. So that was our day out at Warhammer World and Games Workshop in Nottingham. The Mecca, if you like. The hobby Mecca, many would say. And I'd agree, you know. I know that, you know, I'm guilty of probably slagging off Games Workshop sometimes. I think most of us do it. They're an easy target sometimes, but I owe, like, everything to them from getting started in the hobby. Like I said, you know, they captured my imagination at a young age. And I immersed myself in all their lore and their products as much as I could, you know, White Dwarf. So to go there was a brilliant experience, and one that I'm very fond of looking back now and being able to talk about it and just look back over some of my photos as well. So I really thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said at the start, and I'll mention it one more time, the museum, I think it could have been a museum rather than an exhibition. I would have loved to have seen that, but you know, maybe that's just not what most of the folks that go there are looking for. Maybe that's how most people that are visiting it these days like it. You know, they just like to see as much of the modern stuff as possible. Maybe they see the older stuff as a bit tacky because we're all different after all. So I thoroughly recommend going. You know, if you ever get the opportunity to do it yourself, no matter where you are in the world, you know, if you're in that region of England or just the UK in general, because it's a small place, and you're maybe in two minds about whether it's going to be worth it, I would say absolutely go for it, you know, and just enjoy it. Like, you know, it is the company in its modern iteration. And I know that there are things that we're not always happy with, certainly things that we'd like to change or like to see go back to the way they were. But in all, a great experience. I'm really glad we did it. And I think I would go back as well. I'd have no qualms about going back if we were ever down that way in the future again. Our question of the month for April 2024 is, have you ever tried to convince a 40k or Age of Sigmar player to play a non-GW miniatures game? If so, what was the response? What game did you play? And crucially, did they enjoy it? I'd love to hear about your own experiences on this front, and you could record your audio feedback by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now, back to the show. By the way, I'll just add that you could see all the photos that I took when I was there. Just open up your podcast app and there'll be a link in the episode show notes, or you could go to that link directly at bedroombattlefields.com/Warhammer World Picks. That's all one word, Warhammer World Picks. Back in the town centre as well, it's funny because, you know, you've just been to a place like that and then ended up in a couple of like wee toy shops here and there. I was looking at all the Halloween stuff because at the time of recording we're sort of mid-October and all the Halloween stuff is out in the shops, and I was just looking at that and thinking that's a great opportunity. Like we talked in a recent episode about fish tank terrain, but all the stuff you could buy for Halloween, you know, there's great terrain opportunities and even modelling opportunities. You know, you get you get like giant skulls and big skeletal hands, and there's quite a lot you could do with stuff like that, I think. And it's proper cheap. Like, I know the fish tank terrain isn't the cheapest, but you look at some of this stuff, like it's, you know, a couple of pound for quite a cool big, like I say, a big skeletal hand. I thought you could give that a bit of a spray and a dry brush, and it would make a great addition to a table. So aye, Halloween stuff, if you're listening time of recording, it's a great opportunity to go out there and get creative, get some stuff to build your terrain around. Another thing I've seen now and then in the modelling and painting world is like kids' toy dinosaurs. So some of like, and I remember it was the same when I was wee, like some of the dinosaur toys that you get are quite realistic and quite sort of heavy, sturdy bits of kit. And I have seen in the past, especially folks running like lizard men armies and stuff, they'll use kids' toy dinosaurs and maybe just, you know, base them and give them a bit of a paint up, and it turns out really well. Like, again, if you don't want to pay £500 for Smaug the dragon, you could probably find a decent like toy dragon in a toy shop for 5% of the price, and do a bit of work on it and probably create something really cool. But like I say, this isn't a revelation for me. It's something I've seen out there on the internet before, that people do use kids' toys sometimes to make models or conversions out of. So there's a wee question for you for this episode. Like, you know, what's your favourite source for unconventional terrain or miniatures? Like, do you use kids' toys? Another example I seen a while back, I'm sure it was on Discord, one of the guys there was building a castle, like using a kids' toy castle and you know, turning that into something that could go onto the tabletop as well. So I really like to see that. I'd really like to hear more from folks, you know. Great to see you in the Discord and maybe get some pictures of stuff you've made from your Halloween, your kids' Halloween collection or toy dinosaurs. Another one I liked when I was wee, the Monster in My Pocket models. I was going to call them miniatures there, and ostensibly they were. Like, they were proper, pretty much 28mm scale, and I don't know if this was just a British thing or if they were available elsewhere in the world, but they were little monsters, rubber monsters, and you could, like a couple of them I'd stuck on bases and gave them a bit of a paint back in the day when I was wee, and they were the perfect scale, and they were really, really good wee models as well. So I actually found, when we moved house, I found I found my collection from when I was wee of the monster in my pockets, and I'd put photos on the website as well, so I'll stick them in the show notes. Like, if you had them when you were wee, I bet you'll like a look around them. And if you didn't, you know, if you're curious as to what they look like, you'll get a wee shufty over them as well. So like I say, I'll put links to those in the show notes. Alright then, it's time to dive into the old Discord server at bedroombattlefields.com/discord, because we're going to talk a wee bit about this month's painting challenge, month October 2022. I think the agreement for us to do was just an old Hammery style, you know, nostalgic looking miniature, whether that is an original or a kind of tribute style miniature. We're going to paint up one of those each and just document our progress over the month. And another caveat in the spirit of the podcast as well, give it a puerile name. I kind of regret that now, because last time I looked in there, I'm thinking, looking at some of these names, I'm going to have to read them out on the podcast. So if you're in the car with any kids or that, this is maybe a time to hit pause and maybe put some music on for the rest of your journey. Come back to the podcast when you're at your painting table and on your own. So I started off setting the very low barrier with this. I picked up it was one of the Nightmare Miniatures Goblins. So Nightmare Miniatures, a company I talk about a lot, and I really like them. And this wee guy, he's a goblin, and he's the spitting image, for anyone in the UK, any football fans, he's the spitting image of Neil Warnock. The difference is, I mean, I say the difference, Neil Warnock might well wear these in the privacy of his own home, but he's got a big pair of metal boobies, big pair of spiky metal boobies. But I was saying that here's Neil Warnock, and I think it was Mark that had said he used to think Neil Warnock's name was Neil Warlock. So I thought that would be a good name for him, Neil Warlock with a pair of spiky metal tits. What about that? I've not done that much to him, to be honest. I've not been around to get to the painting table. He's been based, he's been undercoated, he's had his token splash of skeleton horde, and that's about it for now. So I'm hoping to make some progress on Neil Warlock in the next week or two. So George is doing an old Ultramarine. He's calling him Ulrich Johnson. I take it that's a reference to former Gladiators presenter Ulrika Johnson. Maybe have to do a sort of John Fashanu style companion or standard bearer for him further down the line. But yeah, looking forward to seeing your progress on that, George. Colin says here's my entry. His name will be Samoth, as named after the guitarist of metal band Emperor, because he is a Black Templar Emperor's champion. Try saying that with your mouth full and fast three times. Christ, here's one to read out. Obscure Ghost. It's an orc. Shagsmack Skogsbutt. Shagsmack Skogsbutt. A good 97 Gorka Morka mini that he bought on Tuesday. So, yeah, Shagsmack Skogsbutt. I think Skog's Butts. Eerie me. What have we started here? Going further down, I'm just... Oh no, here's one. Space Goblin, he's got a squig. Ligma Balls. I mean, these look... When you see them written out, it's fine. But when you actually just have to read them out, it's just out and out rude, isn't it? So we've got Ligma Balls there, little squig. I see Idle Doodler's picked up one. No name on that, I don't think, but he looks like a old sort of Empire gunner type miniature. Fortunately, I don't have to read out any names for him. Nirad says, working on this Norse dwarf from Citadel. Let's call him Old Horn. Samuel's picked out a couple of miniatures. A GW dwarf from 1985, or a skeleton from Prince August from 1986. And I'm scrolling down, so I'm seeing some gradual progress being made on some of these. Dearie me, here's one from Mark. Baron Arles, Guardian of Balls Deep. Dearie me. Covering Fire has a Hobgoblin rocket launcher crewman, Zugmadik. I'm not even saying that again. Late Night Painting picked up a Squig Hopper. I think I have the exact same miniature in my painting pile. A little Squig Hopper. He's on his squig, obviously, holding a club above his head. I guess that's just what they do, isn't it? Jason's posted a photo of an entire army. Wonder if that literally is his challenge for this month. Yeah, seen some great progress on these miniatures as I scroll through. Solo Gamer, he's got a big demon. Is that Balgorg? Is that his name? Balrog? Anyway, His name is I Shat Myself. And he's going to strip him, so he's about to descend into the well of Debt Toll, from where he'll soon be summoned. So that's really good work there. I Shat Myself. Happens to us all, doesn't it? There's more from Samuel, so he's making progress. This dwarf is called Bombu Belly Bong. That's a bit cleaner, at least. Sounds like a kid's TV character. And yeah, there he is, finished now. Some fantastic painting in here. And really good sort of backgrounds as well. Some folks could take really good photos. I'd be interested in doing an episode about that in future, actually. Whether that was with one person, or maybe I could just get various folks to send in their own wee audio clips. I want to explore that a bit more. How do you take a good picture? Because it's all very well painting up a miniature to the best of your ability, but sometimes I think photos could let us down. Certainly with me, that's something I struggle with, just to get a really good photo of something. So I'd be interested in exploring that topic. Get in touch if you'd like to chat about it with me. Late night painting, there's his squiggle done and dusted. That looks spectacular, yeah. Really unique colour scheme there as well. I mean, I am colourblind, but I could see that the squig isn't a conventional colour, and it's just worked really well. And again, to my last point, a cracking photo of it too. I think that might be it for now. Interestingly, the conversation does move to taking pictures too. Idle Doodler's got a light box there. That is something I know nothing about, but I could see how that would work really well. So that's cool. A light box, I'll need to look into something like that. And it's homemade by the looks of it as well. So that's the latest on the painting challenge for October. Like I say, if you want to join in, there's still plenty of time. And just get in the Discord anyway if you can. bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It's just a nice place to dip in and out of and catch up with what everyone's up to. Tell you what I'd like to do. Like, I would like to get all these photos of these miniatures once they're completed and post them up on the website as well. And I was just thinking there what you should do if you're involved in this, or if you're not, you know, this is a really cool resource as well, is a website called mtgcardsmith.com. That's all one word, mtgcardsmith. I think MTG, that's Magic the Gathering. I'm pretty certain of that, the card game. But if you go on here, you can create cards, obviously, and you could make pretty decent like tributes to the old combat cards, the old Citadel combat cards. So if you've got a good photo of your old Hammery style miniature, or like any miniature to be honest, you can go on there and you could put little stats, you could put their name on there, their bio and stuff like that. So the website is mtgcardsmith.com. again, I'll put a link to that in the show notes where you could check it out. But really cool resource. You could just make little free cards, and I've done it before. I did it with some of my Dungeon Saga, the miniatures I made for Dungeon Saga, made some little cards for those. So yeah, cool resource there, mtgcardsmith.com. Again, on the Discord too, I got a lot of really good feedback about the magazines. I talked on a previous episode about just how I'd like to see some sort of miniature agnostic, games agnostic magazine out there. And several members of the Discord pointed out that such things do exist. And I got a whole list of stuff to check out. So apologies for my ignorance there. This is another classic example of me rambling into a microphone and often not knowing what I'm talking about and making sweeping statements that aren't true. So there are lots of miniature wargaming magazines out there. A lot of them do seem to focus on the historical. And if you listen to that previous episode, you'll know my feelings on historical war games. It's just not, they're not really for me. But the magazine in question that I reckon most caught my eye was one called Miniature War Games. So I think I need to thank Wolfshead67 for that. Thank you very much. I don't really like to, I know I don't often credit people with stuff in the Discord. I don't really like scrolling through it when I'm recording, because although I could then be factually correct, it doesn't really make for very good audio, I don't think. But just having a quick look in there just now. So Wolfshead67 had said, I'll throw my hat in the ring with Miniature War Games magazine. So I'd ordered a copy of that, just to sort of check it out and see what it was like, and it was really, really good. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Took it with me down to Nottingham, so, you know, sitting in the evening when I was just chilling out with a beer and had a wee flick through it. So I actually went and subscribed to it, I think you get your quarterly subscription for like £16 or something like that. Seems very reasonable to me. So I am now a subscriber to the Miniature Wargames magazine, and they do have a lot of historical stuff in there. From the one copy that I've got, I would maybe say 50-50 between the sort of sci-fi and fantasy and historicals, and I'm totally fine with that. You know, I'll still read through these wee things, and sometimes it's maybe somebody's creating something, so that's still really interesting as well. So Miniature Wargames magazine, I'm now a subscriber of that, but there was a lot more magazines mentioned in here. Wargames Illustrated was one called 28 Mag. Looks like there's one called Damaged, and one called Toy Soldier Collector Magazine. So plenty of content out there. So I've, made a good old fool of myself saying that such a thing could not and would not exist, when they do, and that looks like they're doing very well as well. So thank you for all the recommendations there, and I'm looking forward to my next issue popping through the door. By the way, like I mentioned when I was talking about magazines, or my want for a magazine in the last episode, I'd mentioned White Dwarf, and you know the reasons that I wouldn't buy White Dwarf these days, not because I don't think it would be a good magazine, it's just because my interests are so much wider than Games Workshop. But after my trip to Warhammer World itself, I was in a newsagent's and I saw White Dwarf for sale, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to just buy one, just to, you know, pure curiosity. I'll have a read through it and see what I think. So I picked up a copy, I think it's the September copy, 2022. So I got that, and I've not read it cover to cover, although I have flicked through it. I've read a couple of articles. I plan on pretty much reading it cover to cover. And I'm definitely not their target audience for this, for reasons that I've went on about enough, I think, already. But I was pretty impressed with the quality of it. Not surprised, though, because, again, they're a very big company. They've been doing this a long time. They know what they're doing. It's nothing at all like the White Dwarf of our day, you know, the sort of mid-90s stuff, and I didn't expect it to be. The art style is very different. I don't know if manga's not the right word. And again, I don't really know anything about manga anyway, but the art style, the drawings and stuff is very different. I can't really articulate it, but you'd know it if you've seen it, you know. And again, that'll just be a stylistic thing. There'll be different artists these days and all that. The photos as well, you know, the photos are very spectacular. Like when you're seeing pictures of the games and stuff like that, they're just really cinematic, completely different to, again, harking back to the 90s. You had the nice green, colourful sort of layouts, blue skies. I really like that. And again, not beating that same drum over and over, but things do change, and we just have to kind of accept that and appreciate that what they're doing now appeals to a lot of people, and you can definitely see why as well. But I think it's a good mag. You know, they kind of, I'm just picking it up here, so they've got they open with a letters page, so there's a few cool letters in there, bit of variety. Somebody sent in a poem too, maybe I should send mine in for the other week there. Folk have sent in pictures of miniatures they've painted. There's a couple of articles I read. There was one from Andy Clark, Worlds of Warhammer. He was basically dealing with the question, are there any good guys in 40k? Spoiler, no. Lots about the Necrons in this edition. In fact, you get a free cardboard. It's like a wee mini game. Like from what I understand, I've not really read it in depth yet. It's like a campaign, and it is a nod to the editor was saying. Let me just. The editor Lyle was saying that this is a bit of a nod to Mighty Empires, which is that's a game, I think, before my time, but obviously one that a lot of people look back on with some fondness. So, like I say, lots on the Necrons. I really don't like I had a Necron miniature, I think I've mentioned it before. I had a Necron miniature back in the day, one of the originals came on the front of White Dwarf. But I really don't like the modern Necrons. They're just, I don't know, they're the sort of thing I should like, because I love Terminator 2. But these things, the big weird heads, and I tried to assemble a box of them a couple of years ago, and I found them horrendous, so I just promptly got rid of them. But yeah, Necrons, cool concept, but definitely not the miniatures for me in this day and age. So you could see they kind of split the magazine up. I'm saying you could see. You can't see because this is audio, but 40K gets the sort of front of the magazine. We move on to Kill Team. So they signpost this stuff pretty well. You could see on the sort of side of the page what you're looking at. We've got Age of Sigmar, which just confuses the hell out of me. I know that if I spent a bit of time reading into it, I would start to understand it, but it really confuses the hell out of me, the Age of Sigmar thing. I don't know where it's supposed to be set or what's going on or who half the people are and why they're like weird golden space marines involved. We've got Warcry here. We've got Warhammer Underworld. So that's the game I was talking about, isn't it? The one that you play on the wee hex base, I think. By the way, if I'm getting loads of stuff wrong here, just live with it. I do try to be correct on this podcast as much as I can, but I admit that I usually don't manage it. Here's I don't know if this is a brand new miniature or a wee painting guide. We've got Tom here, Teclis, the high elf mage. And we've got a nice wee picture here of the miniature in 1992 and then his 2002 iteration. And the one that you could buy these days, Jesus Christ, this thing, I don't know, like basically he's basically like some sort of gothic statue. Again, like these are proper works of art, but the aesthetic, it doesn't really do it for me. I look back at that 92 version and I think, there you go. There's a miniature. But yeah, different strokes for different folks, isn't it? Aye, because this is the heavy metal section. And then we've got Warhammer, the Horus Heresy. That Horus, he's some boy, isn't he? So they're doing a battle report here. And then we get some more nice pictures. Then we got a bit of fiction at the end. I think that's a story at Black Library. I think that's a story about Skaven. Then a wee inside the studio section to wrap it up. We've got a wee card there for Hobby Bingo, so you could mark off the things that you're working on as well. So what are we? 145 pages. £6.99, you know, not the cheapest magazine I've ever picked up. I don't know what I expected to pay. You know, I think for the size of it, it's probably just what you pay these days. So that's issue 480. Don't know what my last issue would have been back in the day. You'd be talking the sort of late 90s, so I don't know what that would be. But anyway, I'm impressed. I'm not going to become a regular reader to it, but say I'm maybe getting on a train one day myself and I'm getting my six pack of beer and I see a white dwarf, I'd definitely pick it up. It's a fun sort of flick through and it's an institution, isn't it? Like no matter what aspect of the hobby you're into, what era you're into, you can't argue that White Dwarf is an institution. And I'm sure what we're looking at now will be very different in 10 years and 20 years. You know, people that are into it now will maybe be harking back to today in the grim darkness of the far hobby future where there's only war over whose aesthetics are best. I'd also recently published a post on the blog itself just before I went away on that wee holiday there. And this was called Minimum Effective Miniature Painting. And it was just a step-by-step in my process. You've heard me bang on about this before on the show, but I'm not what you would consider a good or talented painter. I have a workflow that gives me results that I'm happy with. And I was just kind of talking through that with three different photos from the stages. With the you know, basing the miniature first. When I say basing, I'm not talking about undercoating, but actually putting the basing material on so that when the undercoat goes on, that's all part of it. You know, it's all painted already, so it just literally needs the miniature to be painted at that point. So I'm doing a black undercoat and then the zenithal highlight from the top with I think it's the Wraithbone, the Citadel Wraithbone. Then after that I do a full coat, I just cover the whole thing in the skeleton horde, and it really sort of fills in the little shady areas and almost makes the miniature look finished at a bit very basic level. And then after that I'll just start picking out the little colours here and there. I'll paint the base with the Plaguebearer flesh so it gives it a nice green grassy colour, and then I'll do the traditional goblin green around the base edge as well. So minimum effective painting, I've called that blog post. It's got a few pictures just talking through the process, and this isn't me trying to do some sort of how to or that. Like so much good content out there from actual talented painters. This is just me saying, you know, here's how I don't spend so much time on a miniature and still get it to a standard that I'm happy with myself. So if you want to check that out, it's at bedroombattlefields.com, or again, I'll stick the link in the show notes. Right then, I think that's about us for this episode, isn't it? Unless there's anything else, I ask the empty room around me, and it doesn't look like there is. So I should get on and do something productive, I guess. But it's been an enjoyable chat. I really appreciate you spending some time with me. And remember, like I say, all links in the show notes. You'll find those photos at bedroombattlefields.com/Warhammer World Picks. And please join in the Discord too at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. All right, hope you're having a decent day wherever you are out there in the world. Hope you're having a decent week as well. And stay tuned for more content coming your way on this humble tabletop miniature hobby podcast feed. Thanks very much.